I couldn't get into the meeting. I'm sitting there clicking on the meeting sites. I'm trying to go in through phone. And I could not get in. This is the second meeting that I've had problems with WebEx. I unloaded it and downloaded it again. David, this is the second time I'm having problems with WebEx trying to get in. The other day, I got in and I had no video, but I had audio and it was distorted. So I texted her and then I lost everything. I got back in like 30 minutes into it. I've been doing this since a quarter till. Mm-hmm. Hold on.
Let's see here. There might be a better option.
And I hate it on my phone because it doesn't record well.
Okay, I'm gonna send you this right now. If you go to this site here, it's their channel, their live channel.
Like TV channel. Can you email it to me?
Yes, I'll email it to you right now.
Okay. Yeah, I said this time if it happened, because I actually uninstalled and reinstalled WebEx from last time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just in case it was me. So every time I click on the actual meeting details and it opens up join WebEx and everything, and then it says meeting not something, and there may not be a meeting. I don't know.
Yeah, but it looks like it looks like it's on the first channel 16.
Okay.
Because they're talking about the racial equity pillars, and I believe I saw that on their,
okay,
on this meeting's agenda. But yeah, the WebEx as a platform super unreliable. So
yeah, I was doing a lot of interviews with Parkland for a minute there. So they used WebEx, so that's how I started using it. And then when I started doing this, it popped up there. Okay, okay, channel 16. Ah, I wasn't thinking, yeah. Okay. What do I click on?
Live? So you should just be able to click on to watch Dallas Channel 16.
Yeah, that's it. I'm in there. Oh, here.
Okay. Is it not showing you the video?
All I see is race equity office pillars and no audio. Let me check everything.
There's a foundation for those six pillars.
All right.
I spoke a little bit about equity mindset. We need to ensure that everybody understands that everyone doesn't get the same. One size doesn't fit all. Then on meaningful stakeholder engagement, so many times many of our underserved communities feel that things are done to them as opposed to being part of the solution. So we believe that there should be meaningful engagement with our stakeholders, and there's a two-way conversation. Measure, monitor, and report on progress. We can't sweep things under the rug. We have to acknowledge the data, recognize it, and report on it. If the data is not looking good, then we need to pivot and we need to make some adjustments to our instruction, our delivery. And if the data is progressive and it's showing great things, then we celebrate. But it can no longer be put kind of under the carpet or in a room. It needs to be shared with everyone. The next slide, it just shows really the levers that we're using, the equity levers or the equity priorities that fall under each of those pillars that I just explained. So I'm not going to go through all of them at the end of the presentation. I will highlight some of those that we feel are high impact. So the equity progress team is one, on the next slide, is one that is extremely important. And this is where our equity leaders or our equity department works with a cross-section of employees around the district. And for each of the equity indicators, there's a conversation that happens. Or a process, if you will, on looking at the beginning of the year, the middle of the year, and the end of the year. And at the middle of the year, you can see we're looking at 28 different areas that fell under each of the pillars. And you can see we, at that time, 26 were on track for us making it to the end of the year, and two were not. And so those two that were not on track, of course, we're making adjustments. The next slide that I want to highlight is our equity assessment framework. And this is really what we're going to dive into next school year. We need to really make sure that we have a framework that's universal in decision making. And so when we're making decisions, for example, on a master schedule, how are we making those decisions? And that decision needs to be through an equity lens. And so one of the things that we've seen is, yes, we have 230 schools. We don't want to have 230 ways to determine making decisions. We want to ensure that across the board, we're making decisions that are great for kids, and especially the two student groups that I highlighted, African American and Emergent Bilingual. So this is the framework that we'll use. We've started, but we're really going to dive in more starting next year, the 24-25 school year. And I'm happy to share that framework, and it's just a great guide in different questions that leaders and teachers can ask themselves in order to ensure that they're making the best decision with an equity mindset. This next slide really just shows who are all the people who can use that framework. And as you look at this slide, you see that pretty much every group across the board can use this framework. And so when you have 22,000 employees and many districts, it will be a focus for us for next year. So I do want to lift up some, I would say, high leverage strategies or some of our most impactful strategies that are on these last six slides, and they all fall under one of the pillars. So on the next slide, we have instructional equity. And so you can see at the top, we have our pillar metric is the percent of students with proficient one or better teachers. I think you may know that we have a pay for performance evaluation for our teachers, our principals, and executive directors. So we do have a way or a process for determining proficiency. And that proficiency is truly based on student achievement. So we do want to make sure that there's equitable access to proficient one teachers on each campus. So that is something that we monitor. And we have been very intentional for the two student groups that were highlighted in the policy that they have proficient one teacher. So that is something that we monitor on an ongoing basis. You may have heard in the news about high quality instructional materials. And so that middle bucket there is really looking at tier one instruction. And so we have 100% gone to high quality instructional material where we're teaching tier one instruction, meaning at grade level. For a long time, we would celebrate growth, which we still do, but we don't just stop there. We are teaching to be on grade level, not just growth. And then the last one, we have schools that are identified as high priority campuses. And those campuses, many have reading interventionists so that students are getting getting additional support from experts in reading. The next area is programmatic equity, and you can see our pillar metric there is looking at advanced courses or rigorous courses. We found in our master schedule that there were some schools that had very limited advanced placement opportunity. And so we have been far more intentional about insisting, and people can now use that framework so that they're making more equitable decisions. And one of the things that we are doing is AP University, where we have a proficient one or higher teacher who's providing or delivering the instruction. And if they're not on campus, it can be done virtually. So we're excited about that opportunity. We also have added college assessment coordinators to many of our high priority campuses, and they are working with students either individually or in smaller groups so that they have a better chance of passing TSIA, SAT, and ACT. And then our last is our PTEC programs, which I think many know about, but that's where students get an AA degree before leaving. Many times they get the AA degree before they get the high school diploma. And where we have students who are struggling, then we have wraparound services for those students who are identified. In the next pillar are equitable leadership and operations. And so I just included three of our African-American principals who were acknowledged at one point or another for Principal of the Year. But I also want to talk a little bit about having pipelines for leaders, because we know if we don't develop our leaders, then when we have some of these leaders who decide to retire or go on to a promotion, then we need to have someone in the pipeline. So we do have pipeline. We have a lot of professional development so that our leaders are provided support and coaching. And then we also have ways in which we're retaining our retaining and supporting all of our leaders. The next is our culturally competent and diverse workforce. And just have a couple of things here that I talked about our racial equity influencers, our equity impact assessment framework, and we believe strongly that in order for our district as a whole to have a focus on equity, we need to ensure that we have a universal way of professional development options. And then our last pillar is on community engagement. And, it's not our last pillar, second to the last. I spoke earlier about having a two-way way of communication. And we do have a trustee-appointed advisory council. And that's one person who's appointed by each of our 9 trustees. We meet with them regularly to, one, just talk about the things that are happening in the district, and then for our advisory council to talk to us about what's happening in the district and in the community. And so that's a great way for us to work together to move forward. So I really see that our TAC committee is one that truly is an asset and one that we very much value. And then on the last pillar, which is our facility and location equity, part one that I really would like to highlight is part of our bond work was having a racial equity lens. And so due to our taxpayers really supporting the district, we were able to pass that bond. And in the bond, we had $40 million that would go toward our student and family resource centers. And we did just launch our Lincoln Resource Center that's in the south, and that was launched in January. Kingston is in route to be launched next year. And if you haven't had a chance to go and see that resource center, I would really encourage you to do that. But we do see that as a hub of the neighborhood. Of when we have four of them. One is Lincoln Neighborhood or Lincoln Feeder Pattern, Pinkston Feeder Pattern, Roosevelt Feeder Pattern, and Spruce Feeder Pattern. So we, for Lincoln, four of the things that they're looking at is access to healthy food, safe streets and public spaces, job training, and access to mental health. So I just wanted to lift up a few of the areas in each of those pillars that we are diligently working on to ensure that there's equity that's infused in our district. And the last one, I just put a little video in there so that you could see our resource center that we just launched. So maybe if it's only a couple of seconds, I think it's maybe a minute, if we could share that. I think there's sound to it. And it's okay. I mean, I can always send it to you as well, but I just wanted to give you a little glimpse of what the Resource Center looked like. We have a food pantry, a culinary kitchen where kids are coming in and learning how to cook and how to make sure that the food that they're eating is healthy. Families are coming in doing grocery shopping. Have a little library so that kids could come in and do some reading. Lots of activities for students after school. Mental health, yoga. Kids did entertainment in the auditorium. Have a pantry for uniforms and clothing. So that's just a tidbit, and I could always send that to you so you can hear the full effect. So thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Lehr. This was fantastic and very insightful. I think that we'll talk some more about, if you look on our forecast, we have the opportunity to sit down with you all and really figure out the roles of the city and how we can best support your work, what are the gaps, those things. So I'm going to open this up to questions. I'm going to start on my left and just move along here, and then we'll go to virtual.
I'll try to be quick, but Dr. Lehr, so great to see you always.
See you.
Thank you so much for being here and sharing this information with us. I think DIZ has always just been a great example of racial equity and a lot of other things, but racial equity from my perspective in particular. And I'm proud to have been on the school board back in 2017 when the district, where the school board acknowledged the history of systemic and institutional racism in our city and in the district. And we ended up passing the racial equity policy. So I'm super, super proud about that. When I was reviewing the presentation, and I saw the information about the emerging bilingual students, it reminded me of what the demographics were when I was on the school board, and I'm curious to know what the racial breakdown of the school district is right now.
And so we have 44% emergent bilingual and about 20% African American, 79%, 78% Hispanic,
mm-hmm.
and then we have the rest would be, I mean, we do have students from many different countries as well, but the majority would be Hispanic, African American, and 45% emergent bilingual.
Yeah, so it's pretty similar to from what I remember in the time I was on school board. But I always thought that that information is important for policymakers to know and be aware of. the district is over 70% Latino, you said?
Yes.
And about 44%, almost half, speak English as a second language.
Yes.
I think that's very important information for all of us mm-hmm. to keep on our minds. And if I remember correctly, that is by far, in terms of the 44% of students that speak English as a second language, that's by far more than any other large urban school district in the country.
It is. It ranks up there, the yeah. top.
Yeah. Yes. And so that's the future of our city. That's the future of our county. That's the future of our state. So we need to take that into account with every decision that we make here at the city council level. So I just want to make sure I pointed that out. And I just wanted to give you kudos, give the district kudos. Is the ACE program, how's the ACE program coming along?
The ACE program?
Yeah.
Excellent. I mean, the schools are doing phenomenally well. As a matter of fact, the children at risk, and we've also looked at data just across the state. We are part of Texas Urban Council, who really looks at all of the large urban districts across the state, and we're part of TSA as well, and so we get data sets. And I'm so happy. I actually worked as an executive director in West Dallas a while ago, and Carr Elementary, that actually consolidated with Carver Elementary, is now at the top 25%.
Wow.
Which yeah. is one of our ACE campuses.
Yeah.
And Peace is doing exceptionally well as well. So our ACE campuses are doing quite well.
Good, great. And for those that don't know what ACE is, an acronym, it's Accelerating Campus Excellence. And to me, it's a shining example of equity. Mm-hmm. It's identifying your best teachers and putting them in the campuses that are struggling the most. When we take that approach to a higher level, that's identifying the communities and areas of high need and putting the necessary resources there so people can succeed and people can thrive. That's what equity is about, from my perspective. So the ACE program is awesome. And again, just wanted to highlight DISD, ensuring that more and more students throughout the district have access to high-quality classes, high-quality schools. The School for the Talented and Gifted in Pleasant Grove, I'm always going to be a champion for that school. It's doing great work. Most of the students are from that community, the very first Talented and Gifted school in Southeast Dallas County. So I'm super proud about that as well. But just wanted to, again, just highlight that it's important for us to have this type of collaboration between the city and the district. It's crucial to addressing racial equity issues, given that these issues often span across various aspects of a community, including education and housing, transportation, public safety, and economic development. So I think it's important for us to continue this work. Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me these questions and comments.
Sure, thank you. And I think in that ACE program, there's some incentive for teachers to participate as well.
Absolutely. Yes, so teachers are incentivized, principals, actually all of the employees there at the school.
So rewarding and doing what we should for our teachers. Thank you. So I love the way you put it about because of adult decisions. And so this isn't anything new. This has been going on for generations. And I mean, there are people who no longer walk this earth who did not have opportunity from our public education system, who are our elders and who are still, you know, in the workforce at different levels than they could be. And that doesn't make Dallas stronger. We need a strong Dallas. And so I'm particularly interested in this whole thing about the resources for those who support the kids of today and didn't have some of these things when they were in this school system. So you laid out half the timeline. I'm wondering about Roosevelt and Spruce, what, as we look ahead, when those would be brought online, because I can see how those could really help move the needle in breadth versus just the depth around our students.
Absolutely. And I don't have the timeline with me, and you know, as it would be with just construction and renovation, we do have to make some pivots. Just sometimes there's permitting, sometimes there's just bids. What the 2025 is for Pinkston, and then 2026, I believe, is Roosevelt, and 2027 is Spruce. I would like to go back and just make sure that those time frames are accurate at this point, but they are something that's definitely in the pipeline, and we are trying to get those through as quickly as possible.
Sure. Well, I really appreciate that the school district is taking that on and kind of making up to the extent that you can for some lost ground around the families that need to support these kids, but also the way that their economic mobility can improve and their quality of life can improve because of these centers. And that was, I'm glad you played that clip to give us a sense of what all is addressed in these family resource centers. So thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Online, Council Member Basil Dua, do you have any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have questions. Can y'all mute the City Hall mic? Please. I don't have any questions. I do want to say that it is great to see Dr. Lear. I want to say that with your leadership at the district, I've seen a level of collaboration between the city and the school district that I believe has been lacking for a long time. I say that not only as a DISD parent and a former teacher, but now as a council member, and seeing this collaboration and what is able to come of it is extremely inspiring. I think aligning our focus on the racial equity piece has rightfully so done wonders for Mr. Resendez and my self's constituency and a lot of communities that were forgotten or neglected in the past. I want to also highlight the ACE program as well and just give you kudos because the Billy Earl Date, I think, is a shining example of the success of that program and how it really does trickle to the success of a school community and the students who we're trying to impact with those intentional programs. So I just want to say thank you for your presentation. Thank you all to your commitment to racial equity. And thank you for seeing things through. There's oftentimes at the school district, I think, and I will say this more as putting my teacher hat back on, where plans are implemented and not followed through. But I think that we've been able to see a true commitment to racial equity within the school district. And it of course, it does align with what we are doing in our racial equity plan here. But then knowing that the district is prioritizing that, it has opened up many other doors, like our partnership with Forest Forward and looking at how we can collaborate and integrate city services with our education system. In addition to that, looking at housing opportunities. And I know that we're in conversations right now with you all for the old Billy Earl Date and how we can maximize these assets to the benefit of the community. So I just wanted to give you kudos. I know that you have a lot on your plate. If you do anything in DISD, you know who Pam Lear is. And so it's adding more to your plate, but I think that you've really owned this. And I just want to give you kudos because it's great to see visions come to fruition. So thank you, Madam Chair, for having us today.
Thank you, Councilmember Blackman.
Thank you. And I too want to say thank you, Pam. I remember you and I was at the school district and we worked on a lot of those initiatives together. And I'm glad to see that they are working. And what I realized when I was at the school district is that we as the city actually created the issues that the district deals with through our zoning, through our strategies, resources, et cetera. And so we can't just put it all on the school district. We as a body need to understand that when we create communities, we need to create communities with a diverse, mixed perspective and not just forcing one type into an area. So I too was a DISD parent and I also had private school kids. So that's the great thing about especially East Dallas is the opportunities that we get. But I'm glad to see that TEI is still in place, ACE is still in place. And if you don't have TEI, you don't have ACE. So they are linked and everybody has to realize that. And we should pay those teachers that are doing the great work because when there's learning in a classroom that's going on, miracles can happen in a community. Crime goes down, economic development goes up, access to, wellness programs. So Anything that we can do to continue this partnership, Pam, please tell Dr. Azalde and all the board that we need to work together. And I'm glad to see that you're here and you're working with us and that you're keeping those programs in place because they do work. They're strategies that actually work. And so I appreciate and applaud all the work that you're doing. It was the best job I'd ever had. Well, the second best job. I guess this one's the best job. But it was great work. And I saw the inequities that we did as a city and even as a district back then when you walked through these schools. And so I also invite people to contact the district neighborhood school. You will see just smiley kids who just want to learn and parents who love their kids more than anything. So anyway, I just wanted to say thank you and thank you for coming. And please call us if we can be of any assistance, because even the smallest thing can become the biggest issue and we need to get it done quicker than later. So thank you, Dr. Lehrer.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Buckman. And before I give Ms. Arnold a chance to speak, I just want to mention that in May, we are going to be hosting a convening of the school districts in the city of Dallas to understand all the different ways that the city can support you, from community resources to land use to infrastructure, housing, all of that. So we're going to be hosting that and really moving forward in a formal way with the school districts to understand what our partnerships should be. So with that, Ms. Arnold, do you have any questions?
No, I have a statement. Can you hear me?
Please.
All right. Basically, thank you, of course, Mrs. Lear, for being here. And I think the program and all of us, I think, have some relationship or connection to the district. But what I will say, you know, I do have that, of course, an opportunity, have had an opportunity to be a part of that conversation around where you are now. But what I will say for everyone who's listening, equity still, you know, it's something that we talk about even in this city, and I always continue to support our city manager for really putting some muscles into the conversation with equity. I had the opportunity, and we always have to throw it a little bit so folks will know what we did, but I want to thank Trustee Joyce Foreman, because when I was not on the council, she appointed me to that equity committee, and at that time, you know, Mr. Leslie Williams was on that council, and I was very shocked that you even had one. But I will tell you that as it relates to Roosevelt in particular, Roosevelt has always been on my radar because at that time I taught at Yvonne A. Yule Townview Magnet Center. So I could definitely see the distinct disconnect in terms of access to resources from Yvonne A. Yule Townview Magnet Center to Roosevelt. And at that time I was evaluating not only just other resources, but the technology infusion, because I was certified and taught those technology apps. So I was. It always pained me to see that disconnect. I mean, seriously. And even now, so that those folks who are listening, it still concerns me. And I, as a council member that represents that area, we are already addressing those issues. And I'm glad to hear the chair talk about the more formal. But in terms of the charge that I have day to day, that infrastructure in that community, partnerships, economic development, we are coming there. We're having conversations around the Cadillac Heights community, for example. We have, you know, we're going to start a new park there where it's going to bring some sports opportunities in terms of cricket and basketball and other things that, of course, will be available for that community. We have new housing that's coming in that community because of the infrastructure and the planning conversations that we're having. We have the partnership with Roosevelt, that Cedar Crest Golf Course, through I Am a Golfer, making sure that we're connecting there to give them additional opportunities. And I believe that I Am a Golfer gave scholarships, so because I know they do plan on strengthening that relationship. The fire department, I know the city of Dallas, the fire department is working in terms of curriculum, trying to establish a stronger connection there to bolster this whole access, a conversation around equity. So we're honing in on Roosevelt. We also, I'm very excited about some development that we have with housing that we have coming here in that Roosevelt and the Morrell and Corinth corridor with the Roosevelt families in mind. And you also have a new community center that was just, the ribbon was just cut right behind Roosevelt that's opened and providing some of the same services that you described in terms of food access, education. So we are honing in and supporting Roosevelt, but I am just a little bit more concerned about it because I don't want us to get caught up in the fact that there's something now. You almost have to triple up and come back to correct what's been going on at Roosevelt through these years. And I didn't graduate from Roosevelt High School, so those folks who are listening will know that. But I do find it just very painful of what they've had to endure through these years because of a disconnect. So I just wanted to put that on the record. We have some ways to go, and we are definitely doing what we can outside of any formalities. We're just committed to that community because they deserve it. So with that being said, we appreciate you being here and letting folks know what the district is going to do. But I don't think we could function without working in tandem with DISD and other partners to make sure those children and the families have that access and they are not overlooked. And I believe also they're in one of our focus areas as it relates to the housing, the targeted area. So I just want to let everybody know that this is very, very serious to me when it comes to Roosevelt in particular, because historically they've just been denied. But delayed is not going to be denied as we move forward. We're going to continue to do what we can. So just know that we are watching and we are here and we're going to be actively engaged in pursuing conversations and investment opportunities through partnerships with you. So Chair and council members, we appreciate the patience in having me to kind of expound on this, but it's very important that we understand that it's long overdue for Roosevelt High School. Thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, I want to thank you, Dr. Lear. It was great as always, and we look forward to an ever deepening relationship and terrific work on the part of all of the Dallas ISD. So thank you very much. We're going to move now to what an item that I am so excited about this presentation. I think it's one of the, and also Dr. Lear, as you go up, I want to make sure we send you a copy of the next presentation, because I think in terms of racial equity, understanding the business case for this and the overall impact on our city economically, which is something we haven't spent as much time on as we've developed out the racial equity plan. So before I turn it over to Ms. Cedillo Pereira to introduce everybody, I want to say myself that when I was given the privilege of being made chair, and Casey Thomas really educated me about racial equity and the racial equity plan, we knew that the next thing that we needed to do, particularly being from myself personally, being from a place, being Anglo, being from Northern Dallas, it could be perceived as an odd juxtaposition for me being asked to lead the charge on this. But when I was able to really understand the economic impact of this, as well as, of course, the social justice and the human side of it, I know that this tool that you're about to hear about is going to be one of the most important levers that we have in our entire city to move the entire racial equity effort forward and build it into who we are as a city. Dallas is an economically based city. And so let's just speak that language to the people who that is their language. And so what last thing I'll just say by way of introduction is that as we move towards systemic change, which is what this racial equity work is, it's a full shift. It's a systemic cultural change in the city of Dallas. We have to have the language that speaks to everyone that lives here. And so this is the language of business and the language of economics. And that's what we're learning about today in the racial equity work. We just heard about the language of education, and that's what we're doing here. So Liz, I'm turning it over to you. We're going to get this presentation. I hope we'll have some great exchange on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for your introductory remarks. And thank you to Dr. Lear, who has been at the table with the city staff, as well as the superintendent Elizalde, RISD, and a number of other institutional partners that we convened at the Dallas Foundation in November with the three people seated here today with us to talk about what is it that we should be solving for? What are those pain points that you're dealing with in your respective spaces? And how can we come together in alignment to address that through data points? And thus, this developing business case for equity has been brought into fruition. And to a point that council member Ridley made last month, how are we socializing it with the greater public, this REP, this equity work? This is one way of several that we're trying to get more people involved to think that this is something that they own, that we all own together. And it's been on a journey, right, since 2018 and 19 when we first published the Equity Indicators Report with the help of which now the Every Texan, and now and with Sarah Cotton Nelson in her previous role at the Communities Foundation of Texas, and her work with the Kellogg Foundation in establishing the Dallas Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation effort movement that we have here locally that's now up and running with Jerry Hawkins. So where are we going next, to Chair's point, after the adoption of the REP? How do we pull additional levers? And this is what this team of great thought leaders, including Drex Owusu, who graciously found the funds at the Dallas Foundation to fund this report, and is now joining the Perot Museum, so be joining us in a leader in a new way for the city. He's always at our tables to lead. We're so grateful to all three of you for being here today, and I'm looking forward to you briefing us on the highlights of the work. We know we have a study coming, but the study is not going to be published until we have the feedback from our policymakers here, and then return back to that think tank of leadership to get their inputs. So with that, I'll turn it over to you, Sarah, to start us off.
Well, thank you, Council, for inviting us to be here today. The first thing that I would say, it has been a tremendous honor to get to work with the city, really beginning somewhere around 2016 in the work of moving a priority on racial equity forward and up and then down and into the city. And it has just been a great passion and delight for me to get to accompany that and steward the work and to see just how much you all mean about this work, that it is evident in your behavior and in the way you vote and what you spend your time on that this is important, and it's showing up in what's changing across the city, and that's tremendous. Liz said, we are here as sort of a midpoint update on the progress being made on this report. We will return to you when the report is finalized. And without further ado, because I know your time is precious this morning, I want to introduce to you Coda Rayo Garza, who is the lead researcher on this business case for equity. We have a number of slides that you've been provided with. There are like 35. This is so that you have the ability to dig a little deeper into what we have to date, but we're not going to cover the whole of it. We really are going to skim the top to get you interested and to have you be able to dig deeper afterward. And then following Coda's presentation, we will take any questions that you have. And I'm delighted that Drexel Owusu is here with me from the Dallas Foundation as he transitions to the Perot Museum, because he has been a tremendous advocate for this work over these past months. And Coda, take it away.
Apologies. Good morning. Buenos dias. My name is Coda Rayo Garza. I'm the Director of Research and Data at Every Texan. And we'll just dive right in. If we could go to the next slide. The starting point for this report truly is this overarching question, research question that you see here at the top, which is, how much does Dallas stand to gain in economic output if we are able to close the racial equity gap? And it's multiple racial equity gaps. We've identified areas, what we're calling areas of opportunities. You have them there in front of you. These areas of opportunity mirror what the Kellogg Foundation Business Case for Equity report provided. That was a starting point and an influential report as we modeled ours. And so if we could go to the next slide. Before we dive into some of the results, we're going to talk about stakeholder engagement and where we started. I'm going to pass it back to Sarah for this part.
One of the most important learnings that I've had personally in this kind of work of taking data and facts and pushing it out into the world and trying to use data as a lever for change. We are now using what we've learned over the past now 11 years. This really began when the Boone Family Foundation and the Embry Family Foundation came together to support Dallas Faces Race and to bring that to engage over 200 nonprofits in Dallas in issues that really weren't being discussed up to that point in time. And one of the things that we learned through that process, and as we move forward with reports on economic opportunity in Dallas, was that originally when we were putting information out there, we were doing kind of the old school way. We would wait till all the research was done, we would set up a press release, and then we sort of blitzed it and then began stakeholder engagement after that. We have to wait until the information is public, and then we reach out and can pull people in. One of the things that we've learned over time is that that's not actually the most effective way, and we started experimenting with some different ways of going about it. And so we've now kind of flipped the script on that. As a part of the precursor to even solidifying the variables for this report, which really are based on the Kellogg business case for equity that was done nationally, we went to key leaders across the region, and we can look at the next slide to see the first gathering of those that happened in November to say, hey, these are the variables that we're thinking about using. Here's what we're trying to do. What else? What kind of data do you use? What do you rely on? What do you trust? What do you want to see more of that we could include in this report that would create a compelling reason for investing in equity initiatives? And this was a great group of people, and Dr. Lear was there as well. And we said to them, we got great feedback from them, and we said, before we come out with the final report, we're going to re-engage you, and we're going to tell you what we found, and then we want more of your feedback so that we can really lock in on what becomes the final report. And what happens when you do it this way is that you then have an extended group of proselytizers who can say, wow, this news is coming out. I mean, it's already happened because actually Scott Goldstein from Downtown Dallas, Inc. Picked up even the slides that were going to be shown today and already has put a teaser in the newsletter that went out this morning. And we want to see that happening. We want to be teasing people with really crucial data that has relevance. And if we go to the next slide, you can see we've also expanded beyond just civic leaders and have pulled together small groups across the past couple of months of philanthropic stakeholders, government leadership, business, real estate, some specialists in diversity, equity, and inclusion, and some of the trainings that drive into the business sector, since that is one of the things that we want to penetrate, and getting some academic perspective as well.
All right, so we'll go right into the first set of findings, if we could go to the next slide. We're going to talk just for a second about the methodology, if we could go to the next slide. So just wanted to point out a note on geography and data availability. A lot of these projections are economic projections, and what we do know is they're based on geographic, that the data is collected at different geographic levels. The smallest being, what you're seeing in front of you is the Dallas Metropolitan Statistical Area, but if we could go to the next slide. What you see in the blue box is the county boundaries, and the red are the city boundaries. In the next slide, we show them to you side by side, to sort of share with you what we're talking about when we're presenting results. the geography, the smallest reliable geography that we're using for a lot of these analyses is the county level. Some of the analyses are at the city level, but wanted to share with you all what we're referring to when we talk about findings at the different geographic levels. Next slide. So very quickly to set the stage for what we're about to talk about, wanted to share some demographic estimates as well as projections. So in the next slide, what you see are the demographic composition for the city as well as the county. And what you see is that they're very similar. I think we should be on the next slide. So for where Dallas County, we have about 27% white demographic composition. For the city, that's at 28, 41 and 42% for the county and the city, respectively, Hispanic and Latino of any race. It's a very similar demographic composition. Go to the next slide. I want to share with you, in addition to the current demographic makeup, some projections. But specifically, we're looking at the working age population. So what is the projected composition of Dallas County working age population into 2050? And what we have is an increasingly diverse workforce. In 2030, it is projected that Latinos will make up 48% of the working age population. But by 2050, that number is going to go up to 58%. And we also have into 2060, and we know that that number is going to continue to grow. And a similar growth trend for Asian and Pacific Islander working age populations in the county of Dallas. And if we go to the next slide, it's important to think about these projections for the future of Dallas, because when we're talking about economic gains of closing gaps, we need to think about that particular group of folks. This next slide is going to present to you the very first step in analyzing economic gains of closing gaps. So again, if we could go to the next slide. First, we start by looking at individual earnings. So we take demographic and economic projections into 2040, and actually we also looked at that beyond into 2060. And we set up a scenario where if racial equity is achieved, which is defined in this case by raising the average earnings of folks of color to match those of whites, it's estimated that those total earnings for the working age population are going to increase over time. And it's actually the opposite trend. So if you look at the graph, what you have are two scenarios. It's a 2030 baseline. So assuming this is earnings, median earnings, assuming no equity. And then right next to it in the darker green is assuming equity. So in 2030 alone, that's an earnings difference of $49 billion. From starting, this is a starting point. So just looking at earnings, we take earnings and then we apply it to overall economic gains. So if we go to the next slide, we're talking about GRP, which is gross regional product. It's the equivalent of GDP at a regional level. And we took projections that were provided by Woods and Poole Economics Group, and we applied the same scenarios. So what would that GRP look like in the future if step one was achieved, so that racial equity was achieved in earnings, and then that fed into the second step of GRP. So for Dallas in 2030, we're talking about a pretty big difference from $341 billion in 2030 to $601, and then you see over time, again, that grows. And actually into 2060, the difference between both scenarios gets significantly bigger. If we could go to the next slide. And I'm actually going to sort of go through this one a little quicker for the purpose of time, but I do want to correct that here in this slide, we're looking at consumer expenditure gains, and that actually is a $21 billion projected difference in consumer expenditures just across those four categories and just in 2030 alone. If we could go to the next slide, the areas of opportunities that we looked at were both influenced by the original Kellogg report, but as Sarah mentioned, also by these meetings and conversations that we had with stakeholders and community. And one thing that became clear was that when it comes to education, folks want to know just what is being lost. And so in this next slide, if we could go to the next slide, we look at median income for Dallas County residents based on educational attainment. This is 5-year ACS estimates. And so the further to the right of the visualization in the bigger sort of mint green circles, you see that's a higher level of educational attainment. Really, this just illustrates what we already know, what's been statistically significant, which is the impact of education on earnings. And so if we go to the next slide, wanted to share with you what we found is the potential economic impact of closing graduation gaps among different racial and ethnic groups. So we took the 2022 class of graduates. We looked at the different rates across the different race and ethnic categories, and we applied the graduation rate of their white counterparts, which were at a higher rate. And so what this is telling you here is that if we were to close those graduation gaps, the class of 2022 alone, Black high school graduates, we would have this over $5 million in just high school graduation earnings. So to repeat, this is just based on median earnings, assuming that they've graduated high school. It doesn't take into account further or higher educational attainment, so just as a baseline. And then we learned that for our Hispanic and Latino students, that number is over 22 million. If we go to the next slide, we also wanted to look at the impact of education-related health inequities, because these two are very inextricably tied components. You think of education and access to education, and then what that brings forward along. So education-related health inequities, we're referring to disparities in health outcomes that are influenced by the level of an individual's educational attainment. Someone with higher educational attainment is more likely to have access to health care, health insurance, et cetera. And so in the next slide, we quantified the impact of those education-related health inequities, and we learned that in Dallas County, these disparities are going to cost, in 2030, we're looking at about $5.8 billion, and by 2060, that economic burden is expected to rise to nearly $7 billion. And if we go to the next slide, I want to also share some findings with you all from some of the health analyses that we did. Next slide. So here we just wanted to outline sort of why we quantified what we did in some of the analysis under the health section. And this is the health to economy connection, why it matters. We know that every resident of Dallas should have the opportunity to lead a healthy life and attain their expected lifespan. But what we also know is that premature death robs individuals and their families and the community at large of that. And so these health inequities are imposing burden on society, and this includes those economic losses that result from premature mortality. In the next slide, we share with you some of what we learned, that the cost of racial inequity in health in Dallas County, at least for premature deaths, were estimated to impose a $5 billion economic impact, looking at historical data, so 2020 data alone. In terms of life years lost, this impact is translated to the loss of 91,000 life years for the working age residents. But then when we look at that, when we disaggregate that, we see that Black residents between, again, working ages 15 and 64 lost over 51,000 years of life compared to 30,000 years of life lost for the non-Hispanic white population. If we go to the next slide, This slide here, also a result of the feedback that we got from community stakeholders and the meetings and the engagement that we conducted. The question was about uncompensated care. Naturally, like a lot of these scenarios, there are things that need to fall into place for them to actualize. So in this instance, when we're talking about uncompensated care, we're referring to the hospital services that were rendered without receiving payment. We looked at all of the hospitals within the bounds of the city. And in 2021, we learned that these hospitals incurred $1 billion in excess uncompensated care. So then I'm going to move on to the next slide. And then I'm just going to share one more snippet, and then we'll go over to the end. So in the next slide, this is, again, stakeholder engagement feedback. They wanted us to think about quantifying the impact of environmental justice. So we looked at PM2.5, which is a toxin that aggravates especially certain demographic groups. If we go to the next slide, what we were able to see is that Black residents in the city of Dallas experienced the highest rate of asthma-related hospitalizations. In this particular slide, if you look at the younger 0 to 17 age groups, you see that they're actually getting hospitalized at a significantly larger rate than all the other racial and ethnic groups. And so, next slide, what we did was we pooled hospitalization expenses, and we learned that when hospitalization rates are adjusted to reflect equity across all of the demographics, City of Dallas residents could be potentially saving over $18 million in hospital expenses. And then I'm going to skip forward a couple of slides. And then again. And those slides, we were just quantifying the impact of the presence of undocumented individuals to the city, but wanted to, for the purpose of time, wanted to skip forward to highlight the connection between the work and the analyses that are conducted in this report to the racial equity plan, in addition to the equity indicators. And so here you're very familiar with this, is these are the big audacious goals. But if we go to the next slide, please, what we did was we put it all on this crosswalk here for you, where on the left side you see the different sections of the business case for equity report, economic gains, and which of the big audacious goals does that analysis and section connect to. So in this example, for economic gains, we see a connection to bag one, to the big audacious goal number one: become the most economically inclusive city by eliminating the wealth gap through workforce and economic inclusion. And so I won't read the rest of those to you, but I will go to the next slide to then show the same sort of crosswalk, but this time looking at the equity indicators. So again, here I'll point out, you know, economic gains. We included the different themes within the equity indicators where there is a connection, but we also included the indicators themselves, indicators that are tracking fundamentally what it is, you know, equity, progress to equity. And then if we go to the next slide, I'm going to pass it over to Sarah for some closing remarks.
Yes, and I just want to say thank you so much to every Texan. You all may not, you probably can tell from this presentation that they're doing an excellent job, but I will say I spent 13 years with the RAND Corporation doing survey research and public policy research, and every Texan, I have now been working with them since about 2016 through originally Communities Foundation of Texas on economic opportunity reports. They have been incredibly flexible. They are now supporting the city on the equity indicators, and They have taken not only what Kellogg has done in their national report, but taken all this feedback from the key stakeholders and figured out really creative ways to get answers to things that people wanted to know. And that's unusual. A lot of people just do what they do and they say, too bad, so sad. But Every Texan's been incredibly flexible on that, which has been terrific. And they've been phenomenal to work with. So I would just say city money is going to a good cause, as it supports Every Texan's work on equity indicators as well, because they're a very fine firm and they've been a delight to work with. I just want to give Drex a moment to weigh in as well. Drex Loa-Wosu sits in a really unique position, not only as he has been the chief impact officer at the Dallas Foundation, but additionally serves in a lot of unique roles around town, for instance, like the racial equity advisory group at DISD that was mentioned earlier, and on some of the city committees. And so he has some things to say about what the power of this report and also how you all may be able to, you know, make best use of it from your positions and the levers that you have your hands on when it comes out.
Thank you, Sarah. And thank you, Kota, for the hard work I know that you've done to make this business case for racial equity come to life. Good morning to everybody here. My name is Drex Loa-Wosu, as mentioned. I am in the last few days of my tenure at the Dallas Foundation, where I have served as the chief impact officer. And in particular, I want to name and want to note that the foundation has made a commitment to focusing on racial equity as part of our work. We think it is critically important to make sure that nobody in our community gets left behind. And what this data has illustrated, what our data through Liz and Dr. Wilson and team has shown, is that too many of our community are left behind. And we think that's untenable. We think it is unsustainable. We think it is unrealistic. And frankly, we believe that Dallas can and should be the first major city in our country to figure out how to solve these problems. And so we've been proud to sit at tables alongside incredible community partners in trying to think about ways to solve, address, and ameliorate this work, because it's unbelievable that we live in a day and a time where race is an accurate predictor of what your life is going to be. And it is. We know at every point in life that our Black and Hispanic residents in Dallas are likely to be doing less well than their white counterparts. And we think it's critical, absolutely critical, that we are doing whatever we can to make sure that when I see you in the street, you have as good a chance as anybody at being the best version of yourself. And so we have been proud to support this work, obviously. We have been proud to support Dallas ISD's work. And Dr. Lear and team, we want to make sure we're leaning in wherever possible, that we bring the right resources that we can bring to bear to make this happen, such that our city can be the highest and best version of itself, that every resident in this city, every business in this city can be its best version of itself, and that race has nothing to do with it in the end. But until we get to that stage, until we get to that point, we actually have to be purposeful in leaning in and addressing and recognizing that this is not a zero-sum game, right? White people don't have to lose for Black and Hispanic people to win. We all win when we do this work. And so I just wanted to thank you for the commitment of the council in making sure that this work happens, that we keep it front and center and prioritized. That we are at the foundation incredibly proud to work alongside you and will continue to do that work. I know Julie, our new CEO at the Dallas Foundation, is eager to continue to lean in, and that we continue to do whatever we can to make sure that everybody in Dallas gets to be the best version of themselves. With that, I'll stop.
Thank you. All right. So before we're going to move into questions, just in keeping an eye on time, because I like our meetings to end on time. What we're going to do is, first of all, I want to emphasize to everyone, this is a mid-year report. This is not the final report. And so this is our opportunity to weigh in on the process and on the rollout. We're going to talk about the rollout. We're beginning to plan that now, so that when will the final report be done?
We don't have quite yet a...
Give me a ballpark.
Part of it is really dependent. In the next couple of weeks, we should have the version that we'll begin to take around to socialize. And so part of it is really dependent on how quickly we can pull together those groups. So in the next couple of months is when it'll be ready. And the one of the most important things right now is you saw who we talked to previously. If you can think of anyone that needs to be on the pre-conversation list, please let us know. We will include them. And that will make the rollout even more powerful.
Okay, the reason I ask this question now is because I personally believe that this is some of the most important work that we're going to do on the council, period. And so this rollout of that, and as you said, the socializing of this is essential. And so what I want to make sure that we do is hear back now, as she said, who else needs to get this in advance so that when we do this, it's really something that everybody in Dallas can hear in their own way and begin to bake into their own psyche. So with that, I'm going to start virtually, and I'm going to start with Councilmember Blackmon, please.
Thank you, and thanks, guys, for bringing this to us. In the sake of time, I'll be really quick. I do believe this is some information. If y'all could mute the mic in the chamber. Thank you. I do think this is information that the full council should hear, because this is information that we can create our strategies to build out programs that then give us a rate of return in which we can then quantify. And so I do think this needs to come to full council, because when you see the economic impact, I mean, and so Liz, I guess the question to you is, what does that mean to the city of Dallas in mean in savings and in revenue? Because if we're going to make a business case, then let's put it on our balance sheet and our bottom line and say, actually, this will make an increase of X, Y, or Z. So yes, we will spend this much money for 5 years, but in year six through, you know, infinity, we get this return. So, and you don't have to answer that now, but I think that is what we need to discuss, because we do need a strategic plan in Dallas to guide our budget. And I think this information will help that, because, I mean, this is economic freedom for people. And if we want people to thrive in place, we need to give them the tools to do that and then let them fly. So I love this information. You're asking, you know, what you need to do in the next time. I mean, I'd be loved to maybe do an East Dallas town hall, come out and talk to people. I will do whatever you want to get this information out, to get you information back in, to have a two-way communication. Because I do think when people see what this means, the little investment you can get with a huge ROI, I'm hoping that they will see this as an opportunity to change their thought process in these programs. So just with that, I mean, you don't have to answer the questions now because it's close, but I do think this is information that we as a council need to talk about in developing, you know, our programs and, you know, strategy. So with that, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Arnold, do you have any comments or questions?
Chairman, that's probably not the right question to ask me, but let me just say this in there. In respect of the time, I think what I want to just say, and I'm just kind of keep reiterating this, because, you know, Dr. Wong with county talked about five of the most vulnerable zip codes that we have in this city as it relates to mental health, you know, poverty and upper respiratory issues and other health care issues. And so Commissioner's comments are similar to mine. The data is the data. It's been with us forever. It's about when do we get a measurable plan, you know, steps that we can actually address it more aggressively. And so I guess I'll ask this question, and maybe I missed it. Are you all working with Dallas County?
The short answer is yes, ma'am. We are certainly working with Dallas County, among many other organizations and institutions, to make sure that we're creating alignment and buy-in across all of this work.
Are you working with Dr. Wong or either? Are you working with Wong?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. My commissioner, Don Wiley Price, you working with him?
He was not at the first meeting, but I'm sure he'll be briefed in due time. So, yes,
okay,
ma'am.
Okay, well, it's past time with him. What about Dr. Elba Garcia? She's my next commissioner.
She attended our meeting. Yes, ma'am.
All right. So what we will do, I was just going to reiterate, 75210, 75216, 75217, 75241, and 75215. District 4 has two of those zip codes that suffered quite a bit and continue to suffer because of all of these, you know, life expectancy rates and what have you. So we appreciate those comments that you made about the data that you have, and we'll do what we can. I'll connect with Commissioner today and find out just where he is in terms of the communication. But we appreciate your work. I just know as a city, as Ms. Paula Blackman, Councilwoman, has stated, it's going to be critical for all of us to get back in this conversation. But I can tell you, we've had the conversation before because I was one of the ones who made sure this information was addressed. And I believe the county also had, back in probably 2019, a conversation. I think they held it over in Councilmember Navarre's district for the community to come and elected officials and what have you to partake of this information. But it just depends on whether or not we decide to make an aggressive move to do that. So in closing, the last thing I want y'all to do, if you will, I was told by a doctor that in the southern sector, there are probably only two hospitals past the Trinity and on this side, on the southern sector side. And so I would like to know if you all have that information on the landscape, our health landscape, and I'll have my policy analyst, Dr. Solis, get with y'all before you all leave so we can ask those questions as we continue to plow along here to around equity and just making sure, and I can't quote Councilmember Blackman, who just said, give the folks the tools and the resources that they need, and they can take it and run with it. It's something to that. Councilmember Blackman, if you don't mind, I think that's what you said. And so you give us what we need, and then we can move and take care of ourselves. But holistically, I mean, we've got to come together as a city and a county and all of our partners to take care of some of these issues that are long overdue. And health should not be something that we have to beg for or gamble behind and make swaps on. If we give you this, you give us this and we give you that. It ought to be equitable. And thank you for your comments about on a racial thing. Whites should not be more privileged than browns or blacks and rich nor poor. But it is the state of the world that we're in now. But I believe in Dallas, if we wanted to really change it, I believe we could do that. So Councilwoman Schultz, thank you for having an opportunity to make that mistake, to ask me to ask the question in the comments, because you know I'm going to take and run with it. So thank you so very much, all of you, and thank you for your work.
You're welcome. All right, I'm going to move start on this side with Councilmember Willis.
Thank you, and I appreciate this broad look across the business case for racial equity, and it's not a geographic issue. I know I have 75231 that has a lot of density and a lot of what you see right here in these numbers. I know in District 12, you've got 65% multifamily, so you've got it there. You've got it in Esperanza. So I think we need to be sure that we're looking north, south, east, west, because this exists all over our city and we can't lose sight of that. But thank you very much for this work. So I would say that on your page about initial convening of community collaborators and you mentioned socializing this at the next step to some different groups. So I'm going to say I think it's time to bring in some non-supporters and share this, because the message that seems apparent with some of these numbers is likely to still be met with resistance. And I think that's where understanding how some detail might be able to draw more of a picture around this and telling a story. I mean, I don't think this happens as a light switch where all of a sudden people just get it. I believe in personal epiphanies because what you're dealing with here is people's upbringing, what church taught, school taught, grandpappy taught, you know, whatever. That's a lot to overcome. And people are living their own lives and on their own trajectory. And I think we've got to respect that. And so, however, I think it's time to bring in some who have initial resistance. to understand a little more about that, because if we want these numbers to really be ultimately the most meaningful they can be, I'd like to have a really big crowd believing in it and not so much of a division. So some of the areas that I see in this where I would say some detail may be coming, maybe there is an appendix or you're sitting on all this data and we just don't have it in this in the interest of time. But on, and I don't see page numbers, so forgive me, I'm going to have to call it out by titles. But talking about the Dallas County workforce will be predominantly made up of people of color. I don't know if this slide captures only those who are legally able to work, or is this capturing all working people?
Yeah, that's from ACS. So it is capturing all native and foreign born. It's not specifically capturing undocumented individuals, if that's what you're asking about.
Yeah, so it does not represent undocumented.
It does not.
Okay.
Native and foreign born.
Okay, and then...
may I ask a point of clarity there? I'm sorry, I didn't get that quite response coded. You said it was all-inclusive, so it could be in any immigration status is what I infer. Is that not right?
Yeah, so it's ACS data, and so what ACS itself doesn't provide those exact numbers. If you look further down in the presentation, we do have those exact numbers that we quantified later on. But this is the demographic landscape, and it includes foreign-born, native-born. It does include both of those categories.
So in one, it calls out, but in this one, you're saying it's all together. Okay. On overall economic gains, I'm wondering, this is about lifting the average earnings. So this is across the board, whether you're blue collar, white collar, whatever you may be. It's saying, you know, if you're a service worker and your wage was brought up to what it is of a white service worker, this is collective.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. On some other areas, just to understand more detail, again, to help get at the story here, to understand more on health, talking about premature deaths estimated to impose a $5 billion economic impact in 2020. So this is from spending impact, lost wages of the people who died prematurely.
Yes, that's the underlying assumption, which is that premature death leads to economic losses for the family.
So the economic loss for the family, but then also for the community, what that means. So that is where I think, besides a statistic on a page, understanding as you take that down to one family, what does this mean? You don't have that wage earner is out of the system. They're not paying any taxes. Mm-hmm. They're not spending anything, generating sales tax, that sort of thing would help maybe understand some, get the picture of why this is a business case. And on other considerations, we've got under environmental justice, you know, wouldn't it be nice if those Parkland tax dollars, you know, they are coming from your property tax, was less about having to treat so much asthma and more about really awesome prenatal care and preventive care available to our community and how strong that would make Dallas. So, again, I get into understanding the detail around these health impacts and what those dollars mean and what they're costing us. And then finally, on the when we do get to undocumented workers, well, they're working somehow, or a lot are. And so understanding more about that, because I think some folks may oppose them being here, but when it's time to, you know, landscape the front yard, I'm going to go pick up some people from the corner and pay them cash and not market rate.
Right. Yeah, that analysis in particular looks at direct and indirect impact of undocumented workers specifically. So when we're talking about direct, we're talking about wages and taxes paid on goods and services. And then indirect is the spending power and that contribution to the overall economy. And then those are based on models and assumptions that looked at the state as a whole. And from there, we determined that almost 17% of all undocumented individuals in the state actually live here in the city of Dallas. And so we took the models and the estimates for the losses at 20%, but also at 100%. In other words, if all of those individuals left the state, we did that at the city at 20 and 100%, and that's how we arrived at that economic impact. And that was also a stakeholder request, and so we incorporated that into the analysis.
And I think the number is good as a starting point, but when it comes to story time, it's what are some of these roles so that people can personify who they may be interacting with every day, and what happens if that person isn't there to fulfill that role, even though they may be undocumented, and the impact that it may have on their life and on the Dallas economy. So I think I mean, we're getting there. This is all these numbers. It's just what's that backstory that people can relate to a little better so we can work on those epiphanies.
I just wanted to piggyback off of what you said. I wholeheartedly agree. I think we can continue to refine and improve our storytelling. But what I would note, particularly on the workforce one with the dots on the lines, is that for basically at every level, white residents with the same educational attainment as their Black or Hispanic counterparts earn more than the Black or Hispanic folks earn with one degree potential more, right? And so it's really an interesting way to think about racism, because it doesn't really matter what the job is, there's still a discrepancy in pay.
And the education slide with the dots that reflect that, really, that's an illustration that is meaningful. But I see things like on the undocumented page and the impact that this makes on our community and what we can do. I know I've spoken with you about this before, with getting people on some sort of work program where they can work legally to contribute to our economy, and how that is good policy. So I'll leave it at that. I'm sure others have questions, but thank you very much for this work, and I look forward to getting to that final report.
Thank you. Ridley, Councilmember Ridley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for this report. I found it very interesting, and I think it is a new way to evaluate the success of our racial equity plan by providing economic metrics. I think also there is an interest group that you have not included in your community collaborators, and that's the business community, because I think they think and speak in terms of dollars and cents and these kinds of metrics. And I think they would be very interested in knowing about this data. So I would encourage you to approach the Chambers of Commerce in Dallas in particular, that I think they would be interested in being a community contributor.
And I will just add that we did talk to the Citizens Council as a part of this initial stakeholder investigation, and the North Dallas Chamber of Commerce. Mm-hmm. The Chamber of Commerce here is not available, but they said that they're interested when we get to the next place, and we agree wholeheartedly with you. It's been interesting. We also, as a part of talking to some consultants that work within businesses around, specifically around equity issues, it was great feedback, even if it's not, you know, exactly what we want to hear, that we think that we're probably going to have to develop a different kind of one-page summary that was originally not budgeted for the business community, because their feedback to us was, you know, you all are looking at long-term issues, 2030, 2040, trying to adjust and make changes today that will impact those numbers. In the business community, long-term is 4 quarters from now. And so what is going to resonate with them is very different. The sort of messaging has to be different, and it has to be at a completely different sort of speaking point. And so we will be working on that based on their feedback.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I just have one thing. I agree with a lot of the comments that my colleagues have already stated, but I do want to hone in on pages 30 and 31. I just want to say thank you all for including that information. You know, especially given the rhetoric that we hear at the state level and federal level, I just want to point out, I think it's important to point out that undocumented immigrants are an integral part of our communities, that they contribute to our economy, enrich our culture, and strengthen the fabric of our country. They contribute billions of dollars in taxes each year supporting vital public services such as education, healthcare, and infrastructure. They are taxpayers, neighbors, and members of our communities. And I think that as stewards of our city, it's important, it's our responsibility to ensure that all residents, regardless of immigration status, feel safe, welcome, and included. And, you know, it's also a very personal thing for me as well. A lot of people don't know my parents were previously undocumented immigrants, and so they've contributed to this country for decades now. And one very specific thing that I'd like to point out is that, you know, undocumented immigrants obviously have children, right? And I'm a child of previously undocumented immigrants. I grew up in this city, attended DISD schools. And when I was 17 years old, my parents had to sign on the line for me to join the military and serve this country and risk my life for this country. And so I always like to point that out when people try to use undocumented immigrants as scapegoats. I just think it's obviously a very impactful thing for me, but I think people need to understand that. And I served in Iraq and Baghdad with an immigrant. So, you know, non-citizens are fighting this country's wars. So I think we need to respect that. Thank you.
What you just said is incredibly moving and important, and that's part of the storytelling. So what I'd like to do for our last steps before we move forward, I got a whole list of questions and points. I'm sure you all did as well. If there's any additional things that my colleagues would like to just send over to me, I'll meet, and then we'll have a meeting to talk about it. I'm going to ask a couple of the committee members to help with both the storytelling and the rollout of this, and as we prepare for a council briefing on this, we need to talk about the timing for that when you are all ready. What I want to make sure of is that our city council, since we sort of initiated this work and we're staffing this work to a certain extent through consultancy, is that our council hears about it as soon as possible, so nobody on council hears about it but after it's been rolled out. So I think that's an essential part of the strategy. So with that, if there's anything else you all want to add, I just want to say that thank you so much. I know that Sarah and Coda, you all have worked many, many more hours than you're probably being compensated for, so I want to thank you for that. And Drex, all of your hours are compensated for everything that you do for our city. And we're thrilled that you're going to continue to educate our children and everybody who touches the Perot. And I want to thank you for all your work at the Dallas Foundation. And of course, our staff, as always. So thank you very much. I really appreciate this. We're going to move on to item D as a quick update. And then if we get a chance, we'll get to item B. I just want to say, as staff is transitioning, that on the Human Rights Commission, it's a very exciting and interesting prospect. So, but it needs a lot more conversation. And so I would like, what I'm asking of the committee is that you please read this report and then give back your feedback to me so that we can incorporate that in case we don't get to it today. Because if we're going to establish a commission, we need to make sure that it's strong and that it's going to move forward in a very important way. So let's just quickly give us some updates on the Welcoming Dallas and that process and the conference. Thank you.
Well, good morning, Chair. Vice Chair and committee members, Dr. Lindsay Wilson, the Director for the Office of Equity and Inclusion, and it's an honor to give you an update both on the welcoming efforts and the welcoming interactive that is happening this week. Slide 2, please. So we'll go from a very, very high level in lieu of going through each one of the slides, but we will talk a little bit about some background information. Focus on the Welcoming Interactive Conference, talk about the recertification as a welcoming city here in Dallas, highlight a few of the strengths and opportunities, and then next steps. Slide 3, please. And so I just want to start off by reiterating what Councilmember Resendez mentioned about our immigrant community. Is our Dallas community, right, who works, plays, and most importantly, contributes heavily to the success of Dallas. And so with that being said, before we dive into the details, it's critical to highlight that Dallas's broader equity initiatives includes a variety of things, from the Resilient Dallas Strategic Plan to the Welcoming Dallas Strategic Plan, the Equity Indicators Racial Equity Plan, the 2021 Broadband and Digital Equity Strategic Plan. And each one of those plans are inclusive of our immigrant and aligns with the broader framework. And as we've seen from the two prior presentations, that this work matters not only to internal staff, but the ways in which it's being situated externally, whether we're talking our philanthropic community or our ISDs. Next slide, please. And so with that said, I will pass it to Christina, our Assistant Director for the Office of Equity and Inclusion, to give us a high level of the next few slides.
Thank you. Thank you, Council members. So before we get into the details of the Welcoming Interactive and the Certified Welcoming, I wanted to corroborate some of the data points that were already provided by DISD in the earlier presentations. But immigrants constitute about a quarter of our Dallas population, so they contribute a huge part of our growth. And 26% of the immigrant population are naturalized U.S. citizens. So this implies that about 74% of Dallas residents may encompass various immigration statuses, so that it can include someone who has DACA, someone who is a legal permanent resident, that could be someone who is a refugee or an asylee. So acknowledging that this demographic is diverse, we also want to recognize that many immigrant residents may encounter challenges or barriers when accessing opportunities. Next slide, please. And as it has been mentioned earlier, immigrants contribute significantly to our workforce and local economy. I think that also really excited to share that in the future presentation, we'll be able to provide more updates about how immigrants contribute to our local economy with a report in partnership with the American Immigration Council. But I also wanted to share that, as it was mentioned in the DISD presentation, our immigrant population is very diverse, with 42% of households speaking a language other than English and over 90 languages spoken in Dallas. Next slide, please. So in terms of our history, in 2017, the city of Dallas listened to community members who were asking for local government to become more involved with immigrant integration efforts. And so in response, the city manager and Mayor Rawlings at the time appointed my predecessor, Assistant City Manager Lysidio Pereira, to work really closely with the Welcoming Task Force members. And the Welcoming Task Force members included representative from different sectors of the community that included business, health, education, public safety, and actually included our chair, Councilmember Schultz, as one of the founding members of the Welcoming Task Force. And this was a really pivotal moment in Dallas's history, because it was really the first time that local government said, yes, we want to be partners with you in welcoming our immigrant residents. Next slide, please. One of the first things that we, as a Welcoming Task Force and a local government entity, did was listen. We wanted to identify what were the key needs of community residents. And and through this process of surveys and listening sessions, identified barriers such as fears of immigration enforcement, language barriers, and also difficulties navigating systems due to economic challenges. And based on that feedback, the Welcoming Task Force drafted goals and actions that were included in the Welcoming Dallas Strategic Plan. The Welcoming Dallas Strategic Plan was ultimately approved by City Council in 2018, and since then, our office has worked closely with community partners to implement efforts. Next slide. So all of these efforts have actually been recognized and has really, really excited to share, has brought on some really exciting opportunities to Dallas, one of them being the Welcoming Interactive Conference. We had to beat out 8 other cities in order to host this conference. And I'm really excited to share that In addition to some of the leaders here, we'll be having speaking at the conference. We also have invited former Mayor Rawlings, who will be speaking, as well as Dirk Nowitzki, who will be featured guest speaker. So we're really excited. We have, next slide. This conference brings leaders from all over the world, in addition to all parts of the U.S. We actually have representatives coming from Italy, from the Czech Republic, from Germany, from Mexico. So we're going to have this opportunity to invite over 800 participants to the conference. And not only will we have a chance to share some of the practices and learn about ways that we can advance immigrant inclusion, there'll be also local artists that are featured. And so it's going to be a really exciting opportunity. And I'm hopeful that you all can join us in the Wednesday reception that you've all been invited to. Next slide. I wanted to also share a key piece of the conference are the community tours. Our team worked closely with 65 community partners to identify locations and narratives that we could share with conference participants so that they can learn the immigrant inclusion efforts that we've been doing here in Dallas. In the appendix, you can actually review more information about the partners and local spaces that we will be highlighting through the conference. Next slide, please. So in addition to the Welcoming Interactive, we also have the Certified Welcoming City process that we have gone through. And I think this recognition also reflects our commitment to being an immigrant inclusive city. Next slide, please. So the Certified Welcoming Framework is actually like a third party evaluation, looking at all of the programs, policies, and practices the city includes in their work. And there is seven frameworks in which the certified welcoming process goes through. We had to submit a rigorous amount of evidence and conduct interviews. Again, Councilmember Schultz was a big part of this process. We had to actually invite people for the audit committee to interview. And because of this help, next slide, we actually became the first certified welcoming city in 2019. And we were able to reaffirm this status in 2023. So I'm gonna do a very quick high level overview of the results of the report in the next following slides. Next slide, please. So our efforts have garnered recognition in several different ways. One of our key strengths lies in our commitment to increasing access to naturalization. And I wanna thank all of the members of this committee. I think all of you at some point have been able to attend one of our naturalization ceremonies. This has been a very important moment where Dallas residents take that final step in becoming a U.S. citizen. So I wanna thank you all for being part of that process. Additionally, our initiatives have also been focused on enhancing public outreach, increasing trust and collaboration between law enforcement and immigrant communities. And another significant accomplishment has been the removal of barriers through initiatives like the Enhanced Library Card, which provides support for residents who have difficulties accessing a federal or state ID. So these strengths reflect our dedication to creating a welcoming and inclusive city for all residents. Next slide. So as we look ahead, I'm really excited about the questions that I heard about how can we be getting more data about immigrants in the workforce, because we're actually hoping to facilitate more integration of immigrants with workforce opportunities, ensuring that all members of our community have access to meaningful employment and economic prosperity. Additionally, we're hoping to enhance our civic engagement, especially empowering immigrants to actively engage in democratic processes and contribute to decision-making in the city. Furthermore, we're hoping to sustain initiatives for language access, as it is essential to ensure that language barriers do not hinder individuals from accessing vital services. By seizing these opportunities, we can continue to strengthen our commitment to immigrant inclusion and build a more equitable and thriving Dallas for all. Next slide, please. So I'm really excited to say not only have we been recognized nationally for this work was also a key part of our bid for the FIFA World Cup 2026, and contributed to us being selected for 9 matches, more than any other city that's hosting World Cup. Moving forward, we're hoping to continue this work. We're hoping to collaboratively engage partners to ensure that our Welcoming Dallas strategic plan continues to be responsive and inclusive for the needs of our residents. Next slide. And so that concludes my presentation, and I'd love to hear if you have any questions.
Thank you very much, and thanks for going quickly on this. We can also return to it in a future meeting. I hope that my colleagues will be joining me tomorrow night tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock at Union Station for the Welcoming Interactive opening reception. At least stop by and say hey. So with that, I want to just raise your hand if you have any questions rather than me calling on you. Yes, Councilmember Arnold. And we have about 5 minutes left in our meeting.
I don't need but 30 seconds. Would you go back to slide 10? All right, when you have Southern Dallas, would you review that data to make sure you get that cleared up? Because we continue to struggle with Southern Dallas and South Dallas.
Okay, yes.
Thank you.
And to that point also, will you please make sure that the council members from those districts are included on the dates and times in case they want to stop by and welcome people to the events that are happening in their district? Any other comments or questions? Yes, please.
I'll be quick. Just wanted to thank you all for the work that y'all are doing. Keep up the great work. Happy to support however I can. And I just wanted to point out that I think that we have a unique opportunity to lead by example. I think local governments have a vested interest in promoting the integration and success of all residents, regardless of immigration status. And when immigrants feel empowered to fully participate in civic life, our entire community benefits from their talents, perspectives, and contributions. Thank you.
You are the best story in Dallas. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Any other comments or questions? Great job, and this is good work. We look forward to 2.0. on this. All right. Are there any questions or comments on the memos? We're going to, as I said, we're going to move item B to May. Any questions on them? I had one question on the WIC, and that was, can we get what would be, if everybody was enrolled in WIC who was qualified, what would be the total population?
And I see Director Jessica Galichelle approaching.
And then anybody else jump in with questions on any of the memos, please.
Thank you.
Hello, Jessica Galichelle, Director of the Office of Community Care. So due to the way that WIC is eligibles are calculated, the best we can do is have a bit of an estimate of what that would look like, because there's a few different criteria that are considered. But according to the most recent census data, our partners with CPAL were able to help us estimate that there's around 209,000 WIC eligible clients within Dallas County. In March of 2022, we served 76,300, representing 36.5% of them, which is up from about 29.6% in March 2022 and about 34.9% in March 2023.
I think setting some goals on that is a great way to move forward. Any other comments or questions on any of the memos? Yes, please. I'm sorry. Yes, please. Councilmember Willis.
This is on the forecast. So I just, in the report that DISD gave to us today was great information that has an impact on our future planning around housing, law enforcement, economic development, et cetera. I would love to see us have a report from them on the outputs of their 100 plus choice schools, their PTEC associate's degree programs, et cetera. And I know that in convening the group of all ISDs, frankly, it should be all ISDs, I think we need to understand how the economic mobility is going to change based on what our ISDs are doing. And I would love to see that shown on the upcoming forecast as well.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? All right. If not, it is 11:01 and the April meeting is complete. Thank you.
Side of the nozzle. Do not push your plunger until you're ready.
I don't want to push our plunger. Okay. Okay. It is 11 o'clock. Sleep over 2 hours. I think I'll take.